Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the deal brokered by Egyptian intelligence to unify the Palestinian government, bringing together the rival factions Fatah and Hamas. Ahmad Shaheen, Professor of Religion, Conflict and Peacebuilding at the University of Notre Dame, joins us for an analysis of an apparently new Egyptian foreign policy and a new Palestinian government the Israelis have already rejected. Then we will discuss the musical chairs in national security affairs as General Petraeus is slated to replace Leon Panetta at the CIA, with Leon Panetta shuffling off to the Pentagon to replace Robert Gates. A veteran CIA officer who also served in the Defense Department, Mel Goodman, the author of The Failure of Intelligence, The Decline and Fall of the CIA, joins us. Then we'll discuss a new national security narrative by Mr. Y, a document in the tradition of George Kennan's famous Mr. X article that shaped America's Cold War policy. Anne-Marie Slaughter joins us. Up until recently, she was Director of Policy Planning at the State Department and now is University Professor of Politics and International Affairs at Princeton University. Now let's turn to Palestine, reconstituting a government between the two rivals, Fatah and Hamas. I'm joined by Ahmad Shaheen, who is Henry Luce Professor of Religion, Conflict and Peacebuilding at the Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies at the University of Notre Dame. Previously, he was a professor of political science at the American University in Cairo. His books in English include Political Ascent, Contemporary Islamic Movements in North Africa, and Struggling Over Democracy in the Middle East and North Africa. He's the editor-in-chief of the forthcoming Oxford Encyclopedia of Islam and Politics. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ahmad Shaheen.
Thank you for inviting me.
And the deal that Egyptian intelligence brokered between Hamas and Fatah is, I guess, the way in which it came about is a little mysterious, right? Would that be the best way of putting it?
Yes, yes. This is not an exaggeration or overstatement, because actually this came as a surprise, particularly in light of the developments that are unfolding in Egypt and the state of transition that the Egyptian government and the Egyptian society is going through. However, if we look a little bit beyond this kind of, you know, this headline, and a little bit deeper into the trajectory of this deal and the attempt at reconciling between the two main factions of the Palestinians, the Hamas and Fatah, we'll see that this has been in the working for years now, for a number of years. However, of course, under the old conditions, if you wish, we can call them under the old conditions, under the old regime of Mubarak, and also under the regional conditions, it was not possible, as a matter of fact, to broker and to reach some kind of an agreement on a reconciliation. And first, things have changed, of course. The geopolitics of the region has changed. Also, many of the internal dynamics within even, you know, the Palestinian Authority and the occupied territories and on the level of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, also this landscape has changed. So mainly what we are having now is the whole region or good part of the region, especially that's adjacent to the Palestinian issue and Israel, is changing. Egypt is moving towards a democracy. Also, we have democratic movement in Syria and in other parts of the Arab world. And here you have the Palestinian Authority, which is supposedly expressing the legitimate rights or the legitimacy or some sort of legitimacy for the Palestinian people. Its authority and legitimacy is under question. We have here a president and also a kind of an interim government Palestinian Authority that has not been elected for years. So you have a region that is moving toward democracy, and you have here a Palestinian Authority that's unelected and is actually its term has expired. So this is one factor. More importantly, or equally important, of course, is the change in the regional dynamics. The regime in Egypt has changed, and of course that, of course, reflected on the Palestinian Authority and its loss of a main backer that they found in Mubarak's regime, and his close, of course, association with Israel and also with the Palestinian Authority and so on. So it was always possible for Egypt in the old days to conduct this attempt of reconciliation at its own terms and whatever it sees fit or to the or for the interest of the Palestinian Authority and Israel. So not necessarily maintaining an even-handed position in this. So the Palestinian Authority lost a main backer. Also, Hamas is, I think, should be also concerned about the future of Syria, which and the future of Assad regime, which has been backing Hamas for a while. So this, I think, has prompted their movement towards finding a resolution. Added to this, this of course, is the stalemate, the general stalemate that this kind of rift and conflict, internal conflict between the main Palestinian factions has caused and has cost the Palestinian issue in terms of course, the concern about the status of Jerusalem now and the ongoing Israeli efforts at in terms of settlements and changing the topographic and geographic and demographic landscape of Jerusalem. Also the issue of the expansion in settlements in the occupied territories. So the stalemate was not working for the best interests of the Palestinians and the Palestinian cause in general. So I think all these elements combined, in addition also of a new, I think what we can term as a new direction in Egyptian foreign policy, all these factors combined actually produced this kind of reconciliation and this kind of deal.
So again, I'm speaking with Ahmad Shaheen, who is the professor of religion, conflict and peace building at the University of Notre Dame. And we're talking about this announcement coming out of Egypt of a deal broken by Egyptian intelligence between Hamas and Fatah, the rival regimes in Palestine that have split the country. Apparently, there will be a signing ceremony, and in the next few hours, details of the agreement will be released. But as Ahmad Shaheen has just said, perhaps pressure to come bring this about was because the president of the Palestinian Authority, Abbas, lost his patron in Egypt, Mubarak, and Hamas are perhaps going to lose their patron in Syria, Bashar al-Assad. And I would think, though, more than anything, and I don't think you can underestimate this, Ahmad, is the extent to which the Palestinian people have been pushing from below, even though it's a fairly authoritarian situation there with their governments. They have always been against this idea of the country being split.
They are against the idea of the country being split, and also are against, and in light also of the changes that are taking place around them. If you look, you know, again, if we just reflect, you know, like in retrospect, the Palestinian people in general have had this kind of, since 1993, a genuine move toward democratic transformation, electing their municipal councils, electing their legislative councils, electing their president. So they were moving since 1993 onward towards democracy and some democratic transition and so on. Now this the whole process has been on hold, where other people and other societies in the region are moving toward democracy. So actually, some even analysts started to wonder when the Palestinian people, as you said, at the grassroots levels, were going to revolt and start their own democratic protests, seeking or calling for two or three main objectives. One objective, of course, is to enhance and continue, resume the democratic process. The second thing, of course, is to end the split between the two main factions. And third, to try to put an end to the Palestinian Israeli conflict and seek a resumption of or some progress on the front of the peace process.
But already Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, has said that the Palestinian Authority must choose either peace with Israel or peace with Hamas. There is no possibility for peace with both.
I think this, you know, viewing this reconciliation as a zero-sum game, like a reconciliation between the two Palestinian factions, will come to the detriment or come to the put Israel as at risk is not really, I think, is miscalculated. Because overall, I think this reconciliation can really help the peace process to advance and move forward. Just from a practical point of view, the if we can say the unity or the coordination, expected coordination between Hamas and Fatah can put some checks on Hamas, in terms of bringing it to the fold of negotiations and the peace process, resumption of the peace process. And at the same time, it will also, I think, give some kind of a push to the peace process in general, because I think this is what Egypt will be, and I'm sure other countries in the region, maybe Qatar and others, will be pushing forward. After achieving this reconciliation, I think the next logical step is to think innovatively and positively and also assertively about how to move the peace process forward. And of course, once this internal split is over, then I think, as Nabil al-Arabi, the Egyptian foreign minister, alluded to, and I think he gave some kind of, you know, like hints, but very brief ones, about what he has in mind in terms of holding some kind of an international conference and ending this kind of heavy-handedness in dealing with the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and the peace process, and enlarging the involvement and inclusion of other international players in order to actually put an end to the conflict and push the peace process forward. I wouldn't also be surprised if we start seeing some reference to the possibility of declaration of a Palestinian state within a year or so.
Well, that in itself has certainly got Israel's attention, and even though Prime Minister Netanyahu is saying that you can't, to the Palestinian Authority, you can't have peace with us and peace with Hamas, I take it that there must have been something leverage on the Egyptian side, because after all, it was the Egyptians who were cooperating with Israelis on the blockade of Gaza. To punish Hamas. So they must have exercised some leverage over Hamas. So, we've seen evidence of within Hamas, the murder of an Italian activist who was apparently a friend of the Hamas leader by factions within Hamas. So, to what extent do you think both Fatah and Hamas control their more radical elements?
You see, this is, I think, the best way to handle these issues, because the issue of just, you know, exclusion and not trying to integrate factions or elements or players that you might think, you know, that you are not approving of is counterproductive. Because in the end, actually, you have to sit down and deal with players that can stall the peace process or can jeopardize the peace process. And you have to put checks on them. I understand that this might be painful, especially if the other side is often portrayed as, you know, like terrorist or, you know, like acting against civilians and so on. But it goes both ways, as a matter of fact. It goes both ways. So in this case, I think the right way forward is to include, and this is, you know, something that Jimmy Carter frequently referred to, and many even policy-making circles in the West and Western countries and European countries, that you have to open channels with Hamas and bring it to the peace fold and the peace process, because they have a say and they can easily jeopardize this peace. So if you, as you said, if a number of countries bring Hamas back, try to put checks on them, put some kind of leverage, this will marginalize the more radical elements. Maybe Hamas is considered as radical by some groups and so on, but it has a considerable representation and legitimacy on parts of the Palestinian territories, and that cannot be ignored. That cannot be ignored. So in this case, the best way is not to actually marginalize them and let them, you know, just behave on their and jeopardize the peace process in general, but actually to integrate them. This is one thing. There are also other concerns that one has to take into consideration that can also put Egypt under pressure and other Arab countries under pressure. The conditions, as you said earlier, the conditions of the Palestinians in the occupied territories, the state of the crossings now, particularly Rafah. And at some point, of course, the Egyptian government will be pressured by the Egyptians themselves to maintain some kind of a more positive or maybe at this stage a more balanced policy towards the Arab-Israeli conflict, toward the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, and also toward the Palestinians. and not to demonize the Palestinians as the previous regime had done.
Well, clearly, the fact that Hamas doesn't recognize Israel as a state the Israelis have cited that as an example of why they don't want to deal with this state. And of course, you know, they lob these rockets into Israeli territories on a regular basis. So it would seem to me that you're going to have elections coming up within a year. They've announced within this within these statements that are coming out of Cairo now, which will be clarified later. But apparently, they have reached all of their points of contention. They are going to go ahead and have elections. So it would seem to me fairly likely, isn't it, that Hamas, given the pressure it'll be under from Egypt and other people who brokered this deal, it's pretty likely that they'll drop that insistence of not recognizing Israel, won't they? Would you predict that?
Yes, I think it is possible. This is, I think, the more likely possibility. Now, we have the phrase 1 year came twice after this you know, striking this kind of deal between the Hamas and Fatah. Once, as you said, in one of the statements that the elections will take general elections. So I'm assuming here, of course, they're referring to the legislative elections and the presidential elections within 1 year. And also Al-Arabi mentioned that he is hoping to reach a settlement and maybe a declaration of a Palestinian state within 1 year as well. And he also, the foreign minister of Egypt, is planning actually to start some kind of a proactive policy and efforts on this to pursue this objective. So here, you know, we have two options. I mean, like if you know the peace efforts are moving forward before the elections, and Hamas is still not in power, but you have a unity government and you have a check over Hamas. Hamas does not have a monopoly over the decision-making process and so on. And there is an intense effort in order to reach peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis. Then this scenario or this sequence sounds very feasible, that you have a great progress toward the declaration of a Palestinian state, and then you have, after that, you have an election or before it and so on, but at least you are reaching really a point of no return in this case. And also you are reaching, look, you are talking also about people here. It's not only officials. I think the Palestinians are tired, and also the Israelis are tired. And some kind of a working peace between the two factions need to be reached in the near future. So here you have made some progress. After which Hamas will become, if it's elected and so on, it becomes a government that will respect its commitments and also the commitments that were made by the guarantors of this peace. We are talking about regional powers as well as international powers.
Well, I think
this is a very idealistic scenario, but you know, like very idealistic scenario, but it's possible.
Well, but at this point, I think the main points are surely, Ahmad Shaheen, that one, this is signs of a new Israeli, a new Egyptian foreign policy, a new government, even though it's a sort of a government in waiting, or you know, it's in transition, I suppose.
Yes,
definitely a new reality on the ground in Palestine, and clearly, finally, they felt the pressure from their own people to get serious. Because we know from the Palestinian papers how you know people who have been negotiating for 30 years and gotten nowhere don't exactly deserve much respect, frankly. So at this point, I think what Israel says is probably predictable, but it may change. Is that a good summary?
Change. Definitely. It may change also in light of the changes that the region, the whole entire region, is witnessing.
Sure.
Now you have people's power is being exercised everywhere. It has been exercised in Tunisia, in Egypt, and so on. And it might be also exercised in Palestine, in the Palestinian territories. So this is something that has to be factored in. I mean, this idea of being out of touch and disconnected from reality and actually the very pressing realities of the Palestinian people and what kind of action they can take once a critical mass is being formed and so on. So I will go back to my initial statement that I think this reconciliation is going to be or should be considered as a positive and not a negative development in the peace process. Because that can bring us actually, look, everybody was blaming, you know, or blaming the stalling of the peace process on what? On the division between the Palestinians. We don't know who to talk to. They don't have one voice. Now they have one voice, and they can present one team to get into peace efforts and the peace process. So this is, I think, you know, how I see it. I mean, yes, Israel is always concerned about democracy. It's concerned about Bashar al-Assad in power. Now they are concerned about Bashar al-Assad leaving power and so on. So Israel is always concerned. But I think the ultimate settlement or goal should be, again, in trying to find a quick end to the Arab-Israeli and the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. That will provide security.
Again,
it's not repression. It's not force.
I thank you for joining us here today, Ahmad Shaheen.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Ahmad Shaheen, who is a Henry Luce Associate Professor of Religion, Conflict, and Peacebuilding at the Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies at the University of Notre Dame. He's the Editor-in-Chief of the forthcoming Oxford Encyclopedia of Islam and Politics. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about musical chairs in national security affairs.